John!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot route!
I don't. What is hot route?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Down!
Come on!
Ready! Down! Set! Hut! 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 Hut!
Hit me! Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch! Nom 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 nom!
It's time for the Soonerscoop.com postgame show presented by Eskridge Lexus in Oklahoma City. Eskridge Lexus is the official travel partner of Soonerscoop.com podcasts. Now, here's your road crew, Carrie, Eddie, and Bob, wrapping up all the action and reaction from this week's game.
Welcome back. It is the Eskridge Lexus postgame podcast right here on Soonerscoop.com. Although, I don't know, Ed Eskridge might want to remove his name from this after what we saw tonight. Sooners lose it, and I'm going to say it wasn't really close. It was 7 points on the scoreboard, but this was an OU team that was just lethargic on offense, the same on defense. 41-34, Kansas State does it again. And yes, Here's my first. Everybody wants a drunk pod. It's 2 a.m. We can't do drunk pods at 2 a.m. We just fall asleep.
I don't even know that if like it validates a drunk pod. I think that it was just so terrible. Like, and I'm not going to sit here and MF everybody out there, but it was awful. That was an embarrassing performance.
This isn't like the Tech loss in 2011.
It can't be explained almost. Is it wrong to say that?
I mean, that one couldn't be explained. I mean, every one of these games that we saw.
You had the rain delay, though, in 2011, right?
Like an hour rain delay.
Yeah.
Every one of these games we see with Kansas State just doesn't matter who the damn coach is. It always feels like the same game rewatching.
They lined up and just whooped their ass for, you know, however long. It's getting a little old, and I don't think that they really have a whole lot of answers.
We are here to put some respect on Heisman Trophy candidate Adrian Martinez's
Jesus
name.
Jesus Christ, man. Like, the guy, like, I, you know, we talked about Tim Fitzgerald. I talked to him again on Friday.
Yeah.
And he was basically like, yeah, if, you know, things don't go well in the first half, they might have to think about moving him out of that position. And he looked like a Heisman Trophy candidate tonight. I mean, he could not be tackled.
OU's defense made him look like a Heisman Trophy candidate.
So bad. And I don't know if it's like more disappointing or if it's just like, well, maybe this wasn't going to be fixed overnight, but it was terrible today, Kerry.
Well, here's my thing, too. Like, I get a certain amount of perspective running the Sooner Scoop Twitter account during the game because, like, to be honest, there's a couple of guys I muted tonight just because, like, from the start, you can't be an asshole like right from the beginning. The first time a bad play happens, you can't demand for somebody to be benched or someone's job. Like, it's ridiculous. But for the most part, like, what it does do is it gives me some perspective. It's like, I see, like, okay, a bunch of fans are pissed off about this. Or I'll see something, I'm like, shut up, you're just an idiot fan. And then the more that, you know, I get away from it, I'm like, you know, that guy had a valid point, and I just dismissed him.
What was the first one of those tonight?
I don't know if I want to say.
It just started so poorly. They went up and down the field on Oklahoma, and before you knew it, it was 14-0 right out of the gate.
There is not, I mean, outside of, I think, Jalen Redmond and Eric Gray, I don't think there's one player on this roster that you shouldn't, that I'm okay. Let me put it this way. I'm okay if you want to criticize any player on this OU roster except for Eric Gray and Jalen Redmond after today.
And still, I mean, I think that you could say, like,
stock down for almost everyone.
Jalen Redmond, he didn't record a sack. They didn't have any pressure.
Did you know that Reggie Grimes did not show up on the stat sheet at all tonight? It was as if he didn't even play.
Not one time.
Not one time. Not for one thing.
That is amazing. I mean, they could not get any type of push. They couldn't get any type of pressure on
their offensive line. Just stonewalled them.
Did they have one quarterback hurry? Do they list those on there?
Well, you got to throw the ball to have a hurry. Yes, they do somewhere. Hold on.
It just seemed like Adrian Martinez was doing whatever he wanted. And, you know, goddamn, it's like every time they play Kansas State, I feel like Kansas State lives in third and three the entire night.
And they did it tonight?
The entire night.
Third and 16.
But yeah.
And 30, they go for 55 yards on the ground with the quarterback that you know is going to run the ball. By the way, QB hurries, they had four of those tonight.
That's a lot more than I thought.
Key Lawrence had one. Jalen Redmond had two. Ethan Downs had one.
Did they truly affect the throwing of the football, though?
A couple times, yeah. There was the one where the Deshaun White could have gotten called, but he didn't touch the guy. He face guarded him, but he didn't touch him.
That's right. That's right.
There was the other play. Who was it that knocked that out of the tight end's hands that was down the field? That was a rollout, though. And it was a moon ball.
Yeah.
And it came right down the receiver's hands, and somebody swatted it out.
I mean, Billy Bowen had a nice play in the end zone there. And I thought that was the moment that I thought they might be able to get away with this. They might be able to get away with this when they held him to a field goal. But there's so many times that you look at, you know, whether it be offensive or defensively, they just had so many miscues, whether it be you're starting to move the football, you feel like you have momentum, you get across the 50, false start. How many times did that happen tonight?
The self-inflicted wounds in the third quarter, this is kind of how I feel about it, sitting here at 2 a.m. after not even rewatching the game. You get the ball to start the third quarter. Kansas State won the toss. They took the ball. Smart move on them. They controlled the ball. They controlled the entire first half with that very move. And then you get the ball in the second half of your Oklahoma to start out. You come out. You have a drive. It goes
You're
well.
Starting to put something together. Eric Gray's getting some yards on the ground.
I think he had like five consecutive plays. Like one was a pass.
But it
stalls out. You kick a field goal. And then you start your next drive like two runs by Eric Gray. Oh, boy, it looks like it's going. Then I think you got a holding penalty at some point. Then that drive dies. Then the next drive, Eric Gray was like 50 yards in two runs. And you screw up that drive, too. And then you have the play where it's like fourth and two, and you're going to go for it, and then you get a false start, and you have to end up punting the ball because you're like on the 39 or something. Like, the penalties, and Chris Murray continues to be one of the guys. Like, I think Brent Venables was literally baffled by the fact that they went to Nebraska a week ago, didn't have any problems. They come home to their own home crowd, and they fall apart mentally.
The four possessions in the third quarter, field goal, punt, downs, punt. And, I mean,
that game was over at that point.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Because the defense wasn't getting any better.
No, and I think that, you know, do you want to get into it? Dylan Gabriel, you can't continue to miss guys that are open and not even see some guys. And it's hard for me to tell down on the field, but just from the way that the fans acted, Drake Stoops was open all night.
I don't think that's true.
Okay.
Watching this game, I did notice that Dylan Gabriel scanned the field more than he has been.
Sure.
And, I mean, look, he found Theo Weiss wide open a couple of times. They're running more of a game plan for Jahlil Farouk to kind of get the ball in his hands and let him make some plays with his feet.
Yeah.
But they didn't go to Drake Stoops that much. I mean, he wasn't out there for that many plays.
I feel like he was out there for many. Yeah,
they went with Mims, Weiss, and Farouk, and then Braden Willis.
Yeah.
So it's like Drake is just not one of their top options right now. And with Farouk emerging a little bit, they're using him more. And you look at the stat chart of receptions tonight. It was spread around really well. I mean, I'm sorry I'm doing this by paper, but Gray had 9 targets. Farouk had 6 targets. Braden Willis, 6 targets. Marvin Mims, 9 targets. Like, yeah, Marvin Mims disappeared in the second half, but you still targeted him as much as anybody else for the entire game. Theo Weiss, 4 targets, 3 catches. Like, if you want to say anything, you should have targeted Theo Weiss a little bit more.
Yeah. It just, I think that there are moments throughout a game, though, that you can kind of seize momentum. And it happens with those big plays. You get the crowd back into it. Now, granted, defense couldn't stop anybody tonight. But
the offense had every opportunity.
No, they had plenty of
opportunities. To seize momentum.
They gained
a little momentum, but they could never finish it off.
Every time that it seemed like they took that momentum, they had a penalty that would back them up behind the chains. And it's just like, it's kind of how to win a football game 2.0 or whatever. You can't do that shit against a good team. And Kansas State's a good team.
Well, regardless of what they did a week ago. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm sure they played vanilla against Tulane. I mean, Brent Venables even was asked that question, like, why could Tulane stop him and you couldn't? And he basically said, well, they were vanilla last
week. Tulane was physical. I'm sure. Tulane was physical with him. I didn't think that... I don't know. It's one of those things, too. Now you get back to, like, okay, well, what was the last 3 weeks? Was it just performing well against teams that suck? Yes, it was. But we go back to the way that they won, the physicality that they had against Nebraska, and it just wasn't there tonight. I don't know what happened. And, you know, Bob brought it up in the war room. You know, you think back to Tuesday night when we're out there and Miguel Chavis is chewing their ass after practice and they kept the entire defense around there.
And you said Deshaun White even validated that they did have a terrible practice on Tuesday.
Bob said that. I wasn't over there with Deshaun. Okay. I went with Danny Stutzman and David Owegbu. And, of course, they're wearing it on, you know, their shoulder as far as they got to be better leaders. They got to be better players.
This was
they were awful tonight. I like those guys a lot. They were awful.
This is the Danny Stutzman you have to grow up game.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that I was told that Curtis Lofton had a heart-to-heart with him after the game. Mm. So, I mean, that doesn't make it better. It doesn't make anybody feel any better about the way that they performed tonight, but they have to be better. Like, there was so much arm tackling tonight. And David
Key Lawrence was just bad tonight.
When he was on the field, I still don't understand what they're doing there with the safety position. It just, I don't know.
Let's put it this way. You have a defense, and Justin Broyles is the starter. How good is that defense?
Yeah.
It's an indictment on your entire program.
I hate to go back and just continually pick on the guy, but it seemed like most of the time when they were having the success over the middle, especially, he's just nowhere to be found.
You need to be better as a team than to have Justin Broyles should be like fourth team. Like, you need to have better players on your team. And that's not all Brent's fault. This is his first year here. He hasn't had a chance, but it's still an indictment on your defense that Justin Broyles is one of your best 11 players.
Woody Washington was awful in tackling tonight.
Yeah.
And they attacked the edge, I thought, especially with Adrian Martinez throughout the game.
Well, that's the thing. They have an advantage with Malik Knowles. And because they don't throw it that much, like, they don't really use it like he would be used at other places.
And Malik Knowles had the big kickoff return as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, like, everything that has happened, and now it's three of the last 4 years against Kansas State, it just seemed like it happened again. It was like deja vu almost, giving up big plays on special teams, making penalties. They didn't turn the ball over, but at the same time, it felt like they did at times. Obviously, they, you know, on the fourth and three or whatever that they didn't pick up, missing Stoops there in the south end zone, but it was awful. And even with all of that said, they still had a chance to get off the field on 3rd and 16, and you give up a 50 something yard run.
By the way, this is very, like, just kind of fan drama stuff, and I don't want to get into it, but I'm going to. But, like, they're trying, and the lights and stuff, they're trying to improve the game day experience.
Sure.
But when the other team goes up 14-0 and you want to have a contest for chicken for a year, and also you want to do, like, games and shit on the screen and just ha-ha, you know, funny, that's not the time. Like, can you not just say, hey, just know the room? Like, read the room.
From a game operations standpoint, I would imagine they can't, because they're – telling,
well, they need to fix it where they can.
To come down in the second quarter, you know.
They should be able to tell Chickenfoot, you know, hey, you're going to wait a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, go back. This game is not going in a way that helps the sponsor, A, or helps the atmosphere, because no one gives a shit about whether a guy wins Chick-fil-A when they're up 14-0.
Yeah.
The other team is up 14-0.
And even with that said, I feel like the atmosphere was really good.
It was good.
It was really good.
And here's the other thing. They're trying too hard in some instances, and I'm talking about Jim Miller, the PA, because I don't know how much you could tell down on the field.
What was that?
He was trying to fit in a boomer after every first down.
He's been doing it this year. That's like something new.
I didn't notice it last game.
Yeah,
but
he's been doing it. But, I mean, McCade Matower jumped off sides because of that.
That's what people were telling me. And I'm going to read you. I asked Jeff Lebby about it after the game. And this has got to be, I can't believe Trammell transcribed this. I asked about the PA announcer, was he distracting? Because people felt like because it was after first downs, you guys go so fast. Like, he's having the crowd yell back sooner, and he's yelling boomer, and it's taking more time, and it seems to be distracting. Here's what Jeff Lebby said. He said, "We'll talk about that from internally and just kind of see. We are trying to snap the ball quickly on first down. That's something we'll talk about."
Yeah, so he's obviously not happy.
He's saying, yes, the guy screwed us with all of his chant crap.
I just don't get it. Why? Who thought that was a good idea? Turn his mic off.
They need to have a cough button up there that they can just hit after he says first down.
I don't know. Like, it's really weird. Like, I don't think that I'm necessarily mad. Not really disappointed. It kind of is what it is. I think it's kind of a punch in the gut to the certain extent of maybe this thing isn't like that's the team that played out there tonight. That's losing. They're losing 3 or 4 games in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Easily. They could lose next week. Get their ass kicked at the Cotton Bowl.
I mean, it also seemed like Braden Willis had some dumb penalties tonight.
Well, he got called for the false start there in the red zone on the 4th and 1.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I think it was Wanya Morris. I think they identified it incorrectly.
Okay.
They announced it, Braden Willis. But yeah. It doesn't matter. Somebody jumped. How does that? The lack of discipline tonight from a tackling standpoint, from angles, taking like David Owegbu trying to tackle Adrian Martinez. There was a couple times it's just like, you're not going to tackle him. You're trying to run straight at him.
Yeah.
It's like it's truly like they just completely had lost their minds tonight.
Well, and I mean, truth be told, they're lucky that Deuce Vaughn didn't have a bigger night. Sure. I mean, he still had 116 yards, I think.
Yeah, and there was a couple times that, you know, he'd run off like that, a 22-yard carry up the middle, and the linebackers were just nowhere to be found. Like, nobody was there.
Yeah.
Like, the seas parted, and the defensive line was just getting their ass kicked. Both defense and offensive line, and that's what is worse.
I thought the offensive line pass protected pretty well, though.
They did okay. But that's what's worrisome, I think, overall, because you say, like, we talked about it on the U40 this week as far as this was going to be a major test. This was the best team that Oklahoma had played to date, and it wasn't a 7-point game, like you said at the beginning. They got thoroughly beat in every aspect of the football game.
Here's what's just so weird. OU averaged more yards per rush than Kansas State did tonight.
Yeah, and it seemed like they went away from it a couple times.
They also averaged more yards per pass than Kansas State did tonight. Of course, they're throwing a lot of short stuff with Martinez because they know if he's throwing it down the field, there's a chance somebody's going to pick it off.
I mean, there was a couple times that Martinez would throw those little swing passes, and one in particular, I thought, you know, Billy Bowman had a rough night. I mean, when I say somebody's name, you can just assume they had a bad night. But
yeah.
It was like they would have guys, he was dead to rights out in the flat, and you had not one, but two guys miss a tackle on him.
I mean, it's one of those things, like, I don't know.
I can't even explain
who had it worse. Like, the offense had, it was terrible. I mean, it was the biggest momentum killing offense that I've ever watched on that field, I think.
They just, and they,
because they've got players, they can make plays, they can make big plays. They just have not, they have to put it together.
It was, and it was a lot of it was like, wouldn't you say 85% of it was self-inflicted?
Sure, let's go with that.
I mean, when you're trying to move the football and you're basically in 1st and 15 or 1st and 20 every time, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't. Well, and the other thing was they just had some ridiculously, like the pass to Drake Stoops that people are upset about, like that was a bad pass.
Mm-hmm.
Jahlil Farouk drops a ball, like a 2-yard pass right into his chest.
Mm-hmm. Mims on a third down, you know, he's open. You got to hit him.
You missed Drake Stoops on a deep ball. Him. You missed Marvin Mims on a deep ball. But you also threw a great deep ball to Marvin Mims, too.
Sure, you did, but, I mean, it's one. It's one out of many that we've continually said that he has to make some of these throws. And
let's face it, the defense stunk tonight. It was terrible.
Yeah, we can see the offense.
It's the first time that they've played together. Yeah. Like these guys on defense, for the most part, I mean, they've been playing together. They know each other. I mean, not Lualu and some of those guys, but you know, Ethan Downs and Reggie Grimes Jalen Redmond and Jordan Kelly and Isaiah Coe and like Stutzman, Agwebu. I mean, like Deshaun White. I mean, like there's no excuse for them to not be more cohesive as a unit.
Defensively, they're just awful.
They were terrible.
There's really no. Was it worse than at points a year ago? Because there were truly points where Kansas State was getting whatever they wanted, when they wanted, methodically 11, 12 play drives.
Like I remember this game a year ago, Reggie Grimes knocks a ball out that Nick Benito returns like 80 yards.
Yeah. There were times in the first half where, you know, I thought OU was getting back into the game. You finally, like, you don't get what you want. You have to settle for three there before halftime. But it felt like things were starting to slow down a little bit. And then you give up an 11-play, 42-yard drive, and they get a field goal before half.
Seriously, this is the first time I think we've ever done a post-game pod where I'm just like, I want to do it. Like, I'm just tired of talking about it. Like, I just watched a boatload of shit, and I really don't feel like sitting here talking about it because it was all bad. It's too early in the season. I mean, they were supposed to be 4-0. Yeah. They're 3-1 now. Yeah. It's too early in the season to just continue to shit on everything. But at the same time, what we saw tonight was awful. I mean, it was awful.
I'm sitting here trying to get like big picture takeaways, but it's all the same bullshit that...
I don't care about big shit, but like, I didn't want anybody to say, well, there was some good stuff out there. Yeah. I mean, at least like, you got stuff to build on.
We have all of our goals ahead of us. OU fans have heard that time and time again. It's like, I came over here kind of telling my dad, it's like, is OU A&M? Like, everybody loves to make fun of A&M, but they might be A&M right now.
They lose the games that they shouldn't lose.
Lose a game that you shouldn't lose, and then all of a sudden you're left standing there going, well, I guess they can get back into it.
They might have been A&M with Lincoln, but, I mean, they still were winning Big 12 championships.
Yeah, and
A&M wasn't doing that when they were in the conference.
I know. I'm being, I guess, a little bit facetious in a way, but it's frustrating to sit here and kind of be back to where they are. It's like,
and why is it Kansas State all the time?
It is. Like, I mean,
what shit are we in for with Iowa State this year now?
I think that Kansas State is just much more physical, and they, I don't know if I don't want to sit here and say like they want it more, but it sometimes feels like they do. They come in and they never turn the ball over. And granted, OU didn't turn the ball over tonight either.
They let OU screw themselves, but basically.
Discipline stuff, that's the shit that was supposed to be fixed. It was almost like Brent was, like, he was shy, like in a state of shock after the game.
Are you saying this was an inside job?
I mean,
Brent's actually.
It would be explained a lot easier. It'd be explained a lot easier if it was an inside job. I just, like, I it's hard to explain the
procedure
stuff.
Did they make like a deal with Bill Snyder? Like when Bob and Mike and Brent all left, they're like, okay, we will let Kansas State win once every 3 years.
Yeah, but they're winning every year now. It's 3 of 4.
2 out of 3.
It's 3 of 4. And
Jesus.
2 straight in Norman. Coming off a loss for Kansas State.
Oh, it's inexplainable.
It's inexplainable, and it's also inexcusable. It's both. For them to perform the way that they did is a little inexcusable.
And Brent, like, you could tell he did not see this coming. Like,
no, that's
Bill and Gabriel didn't see this coming.
And that's kind of the worrisome thing. It's like, did they think that everything was fixed overnight? Like, I know that we sat here and was like, the defense could be good. They're tackling. They're making plays. They lead the country in TFLs.
It was fool's gold because it was Nebraska.
Yeah. But even Kent State, like, I mean, they played well today in Athens.
I know. They got 22 points against that defense.
I think
it's one of those things. I think it's just like the thing on Tuesday when we saw them getting after each other at practice. Like,
so what happened? Like, why did they all of a sudden have bad practices?
Probably because they look like shit like they had today.
Yeah, but that's where I start thinking like, well, shit, is there something wrong in the locker room? Like, is there something wrong?
My thought is like, have they hit a wall because they practiced so hard for so long now? Like, have they hit a wall that they can't get past?
I think it's
because Brent just has them killing each other in practice every day.
It's a fair question, but it's also like that's not good. I mean, they're 4 weeks into the season. This mm-hmm. is still, I mean, you just got done with the first quarter of your season and they've already hit a wall.
Maybe they're beat up.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like health wise, they don't have guys like out.
Yeah.
You know, Mason Thomas was obviously out again tonight. I don't know. There were points where it's just like, I think, and it starts like setting in too. In the fourth quarter, it's like, yeah, they're getting beat tonight. I texted Matt Barry at halftime, and I was like, it just has. We've seen those games where it had that feel where it's just like something's not clicking tonight.
I think something's wrong with me because, and maybe it's because I'm running the Scoop account, but like I'm still like, okay, OU has three timeouts and 2:56 left, like. If they could get the ball back and score, who knows?
If you get the off the field on 3rd and 16, I think they move at least into the red zone. I don't know if I can tell you that I'm going to sit there and say that they're going to force overtime, but they're at least going to have a chance.
To put the ball in the end zone.
As bad as they had played all night, you're going to have a chance.
Yeah.
And I think
guess what? They went 55 yards.
Right, and it wasn't
third and 16. He went 55 yards,
and that wasn't a called draw. He scrambled up the middle, and nobody was there. And the worst part about it is, Venable said they had a spy after the game. Who was it, and where was he? Was he getting blocked?
What's the? This is an old reference. Is it Mr. Magoo, the guy that couldn't see?
Something like I know he was the name, Mr. Magoo. I mean. He would have had a better chance than some of those guys out there tonight tackling because it was just.
It was awful. When Danny Stutzman is one of your biggest problems on defense, it's not going to be a good night.
Yeah. He had.
Something that he's got to realize. Like,
love Danny, but he said it after the game. They were just flat out terrible. Like, I don't know where those guys were tonight. A lot of times they were just being run out of the play. Like, there was truly, through my camera lens, there were points where there was nobody in the middle of the field. It was just like they were having to come from the outside. And, you know, 15 yards later, you tackle somebody.
I wonder what their scout team was like this week. Because who runs that? Like, who could run that? And by the way, can I just say this real quick? Dylan Gabriel is a quarterback at Oklahoma. There's no other option. Like, please stop saying to get him out of there. Like, you're living or dying with Dylan. You are. Davis Bevel is not an option. Unless Dylan Gabriel loses a leg.
And they still might try to, like, reattach it somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. You're either going to, you're going down with the ship if it's going to be Dylan Gabriel. Like, you have to.
It's him or nothing.
It's part he has to play better. Part probably need to reevaluate expectation at the quarterback position just because they've been so good over the last, you know, X amount of years. And the other part of it too is like offensively, yes, they had problems. They missed shots. That wasn't number one tonight.
No, the mentality of that team is the issue more than the physical. The mental is more of an issue than the physical on offense. On defense, you can say whatever you want because they were just flat out bad.
I truly, like, I don't know how they were so bad. And I think that's the thing that I keep going back to is they were at least being disciplined. Well,
Brent said it. I mean, like, if you watch it from upstairs, everyone was getting blocked. There were no free men. No one was defeating their blocker. That was number one. Number two, linebackers were not filling the gaps and were not physical at the point of attack. And they were missing tackles. And they just weren't gap sound. Like, everything that you have to do as a defense, they failed to do tonight. And the only reason that most of the secondary escapes blame is because they didn't have to throw the ball.
They didn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, now...
They threw the ball, but it was more out on the outside edges.
And those guys were awful tackling. Yeah. I mean, they just were. They were getting 4 or 5 yards a pop every time that they threw those little swing passes.
They lose 41-34.
It's almost become like, I think... And this is the worst part about all of it. I think OU fans have just become kind of... I don't know.
I'm numb to it.
Are they apathetic just to these bullshit performances?
Yeah,
it's just kind of like, well, there it is. We'll move on.
It's kind of like the joke that I always make, but it really is. I think how I feel like it's me in a lot of ways, which is Brent. We tried to tell you that guy wasn't any good, but you wouldn't listen. You don't need to start him. You're gonna find out soon enough.
I don't know.
It's like you see, what I'm saying is you've seen this all before.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing. And everybody, you know, now they got their backs against the wall. Everybody's going to rally around them. Or, you know, at least in the locker room, they're going to. And I can tell you what they're going to say on Monday. And now I can tell you what they're going to say on Tuesday. It's not going to make anybody feel better about it.
Monday, they're going to see after watching the film, breaking it down. We see, you know, where we need to be better.
Yeah. You just got to be better.
Hopefully they don't say we're not that far off.
It's the wake-up call that we needed. It's the wake-up call we needed.
No one wants to hear about wake-up calls.
No. It's the end of September. There's still a lot of football to be played, yes, but I mean...
Shit, Kansas is probably better than they are.
They're undefeated. OU's not. There was just nothing. I mean, they're truly, and it's kind of like you said, there's truly nothing that you can come in here and say right now that you would go, that gives you hope. Or that
I think
was
you
a positive.
Could, but I don't want to. I don't want to hear that shit. I mean, spreading the football around at different receivers, I think, is a positive, but I don't want to hear about that shit.
They were just so bad. And it's when you're living out of 1st and 20, when you're living out of 1st and 15, it's tough. And against a defense that is good and defensively sound and well coached.
And they were dropping a lot into coverage.
Yeah, it seemed like that. I mean, that's why they were trying to hit the underneath stuff so much.
I mean, here's the indictment of it all. You know, we don't have to break down who played well, who played poorly. Adrian Martinez had 21 carries for 148 yards and 4 touchdowns on the ground. And he also threw it for 21 of 34 for 234 yards and a touchdown. Adrian Martinez, the guy that Kansas State fans themselves were ready to bench after last week.
Bench.
Came in here and scored 5 touchdowns. That's how shitty your defense was.
Benched. They wanted him benched. They did not want him to play quarterback anymore. It's wild.
They did it all on the ground. Like, almost all on the ground.
Couldn't stop anybody.
And Deuce Vaughn, a very pedestrian, 116 yards. Every time he touched the ball, he nearly went for 5 yards. Every time Adrian Martinez pulled it down, he went for 7 yards.
It's wild. I mean, Are there major, like, panic button moments tonight where you go, this is going to be a long season?
No, I mean, not now. I mean, you go to TCU and play like shit. Yeah. I mean, like, what you have to do as an OU fan is say, okay, it's like every time you get here, you feel like you shouldn't be here, or it's all new, or like it's like this overwhelming feeling of disappointment. Like, no, it's the same thing that always happens. Like, you lose your first game, and everyone loses their mind, and it takes about 3 days to get back to where you don't feel like it's the end of the world anymore. And then Thursday, you start thinking things like, well, you know, these guys just, they needed that. Like, they needed that to grow and become the team that they were meant to become. And then by Friday, you've got yourself in a tizzy, and you're just like, okay, if we just go beat TCU, it resets the season, and and we can still make the college football playoff.
We need to make an oath. We will not talk about this team making a college football playoff. like truly, they're so far from that right now.
Be like, you know, you probably don't know this, but like, if you go into a music store, you're not allowed to play Stairway to Heaven on the guitar. It's just like a thing.
Well, they did it in Wayne's World, I thought.
Well, no, that was Wayne's World. Why, that's they talk about it in that movie. But even before that movie, it was a thing. And we should have a pack. Like, after you have a loss, you can never talk about the college football playoff until it expands to 12 teams.
It's just so numb to this whole idea of going out and throwing out that bullshit game that they've done time and time again.
And you thought it was going to be different because of Brent. And you thought Brent was like, you know, reaching these guys on a level that other people had not reached before.
Sure. And I think that that's why, like, after the way that they performed in Lincoln, and you go, yeah, they get it. This team's not going to have a letdown. This team's not going to have a letdown. They went into a madhouse, got down 7-0, and
shut it off.
And just stomped on someone's throat. And today, they got punched in the face.
Play today? They didn't play today.
No, they were off today. Because remember, they have the October 1st buyout next week. And then today, they got punched in the mouth multiple times. And they got up a couple times. But they kept finding themselves on the floor.
Yeah. They could not consistently land knockout blows.
No. They just couldn't. They couldn't. And I don't know, man. It just, it's almost stunning in a way, but it's not at the same time because we, like we said, we've been through this before. We've seen it unfold. I think OU's lost four or five times. Mike Houck tweeted after the game. They've lost their conference opener, and every year they've gone on to win the Big 12 championship. But that shit just, like, it's not good enough anymore. And I mean, I'm not saying that they're gonna run the table and go play for the Big 12 championship.
But I mean, there is, I mean, I think you have to have a certain amount of perspective that this is a first year head coach.
Yeah.
It's a new head coach.
Yeah, but at the same time, that should never happen the way that they played. You can live with a 34, you know, 31-28. You can live with that. Get beat by a field goal. Yeah. They just made more plays.
All right. I think it's a good thing. Actually, we just had a buddy drop by. We both know Christopher. And I actually do a morning radio show with his brother, Curtis. Christopher Fitzpatrick. I promise this isn't the drunk pod. We're not drinking. Christopher Fitzpatrick. He's you ever seen Hosty?
Yeah.
At the deli?
If you ever want to have a pick-me-up after an OU loss, that's the best place. Best
thing
that's
the only thing that
do.
Can get you through it, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
How does Hosty handle OU losses?
He just tells jokes about Pizza Shuttle and, you know, colonoscopy. You know, everything's about Pizza Shuttle. Then you just kind of work your way through that because he
doesn't. Cones
really...
lately, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cones are the main thing. I want to say in 2006, OU Texas. Oh, you lost.
Yeah.
The Peterson 28-10 year. Everybody was obviously just completely decimated, and we went to the Dubliner in Dallas. And you know, if you just want to escape, that was awful that year. And then we went to see Hosty, and we were like, wow, if anything can make you smile,
there's more to life than seeing all the bullshit that's out there.
Yeah, like not being able to tackle a quarterback on a 3rd and 16.
Oh, yeah, we've screamed out 55 yards many times so far on the pod. I mean, you were shooting the game, right?
Uh-huh, yeah, and I talked with Eddie tonight. Like, the thing you could tell from the lens was looking at every single time he carried out a fake, the middle would just part.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody was there.
The C's would part.
Nobody was there.
Well, there's that one zone read where Stutzman just tackled, and it was on a touchdown. He just tackled Vaughn, and nobody was on Martinez at all. He just walked
into the
end zone.
Yeah, that was the one in the south end zone.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even think I got that shot. I think I'd stayed with the ball. I was like, what a great play by Danny. And it's like, yo, that's because Adrian Martinez has the football.
I did the same thing.
I was telling Carrie earlier, it's like, I think everybody just becomes so apathetic to it. Like, as far as these types of performances, it comes once a year.
And the fact that it's Kansas State.
And the fact that it was Kansas State who just completely dominates Oklahoma.
I kind of feel like what we've seen, at least in the past, you know, early days of Brent Venables, that a running quarterback is still a thing. And
yeah, shades of Brad Smith.
You know, yeah, and of Roberson. But I still kind of, in a weird way, I look at Texas and I'm like, okay, well, the team that's going to beat OU this year, I was like, okay, has to have a good defense, right? And then the team that beats Brent Venables, you know, a running back or quarterback, is a running quarterback. And I'm like, all right, well, the thing is, Texas doesn't have either of those. They don't have a good defense, and they don't have a running quarterback. So I'm trying to look at the positive here.
Yeah.
I'm feeling positive.
You know what's crazy is it's flipped, because it used to be Texas that had the problem with Kansas State. Like, they would lose to Kansas State in that matchup. Like, it would either be right before the Red River shootout or right after it. But, like, I remember in 07...
I was at that Texas game.
OU lost to Colorado because I was in Boulder.
I was in Austin.
And we were walking, we were walking from the stadium back to, like, downtown Boulder, and we, like, went through this Colorado, like, it was like a booster party tent that they had set up, and they had the Texas and Kansas State game on, and we just sat there and watched it because, like, we had nothing else to do except fly back early in the morning. And it's just like, those were the days when Kansas State would always upset Texas. And for OU, it was always like something random, like that Colorado game, or,
Reggie Smith.
Yeah. Reggie Smith dropped a punt. But like, it is strange that Kansas State has now become that kind of just that
thorn in the side
of the Sooners.
I think they just, and there is a physicality up front that they just, OU never matches against Kansas State. And that's the most frustrating thing, is because you know what you're getting from that team.
How much time do you think they spent on Tulane? 4 minutes?
You mean Oklahoma on Tulane, or you
Kansas
mean
State?
Oh yeah, like
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, they probably,
I mean, they, it boils down to they were 3-for-20 on third and fourth down. Like, you're not going to win any football games no matter who you play when you do that. And today the roles were reversed.
And they were 3-for-20 though, because, well, OU, what were they today?
4-for-12, I think, on third down.
And you, I mean, the problem is you get in that position because you just do stupid things. And OU was just doing stupid crap.
Yeah, you're having to get 10 or 12 yards on first and second down because you're already behind the chains.
And the thing was, they could pick up 10 yards almost whenever they wanted, but not over and over and over and over again.
All of the OU penalties, specifically on the offensive line, they all had to be on the Kansas State side of the field on first down.
Always on first down.
I think
down.
three or four of them had to have been on first down.
Yeah, after they crossed midfield. That's
and it was,
when they
it was like
up.
You're finally getting momentum. You're finally starting to get that punch back. And then it just it kills the drive when you get behind the chains. I mean, that's not rocket science.
That was the air out of the balloon every time putting a drive together.
You know what's funny though is, like, I think this happens at every school, but like at OU, because they end up winning the Big 12. Like every Texas today at Texas Tech. I mean, they looked like they were going to run them out of that out of that stadium today. All of a sudden, momentum changes a little bit, and you realize Texas is still kind of Texas. I mean, they're still the team that can't finish, that lost 7 in a row to end last year. I mean, they're better with Quinn Ewers, but they still kind of have that personality, that characteristic. And I think OU hasn't rid themselves of the Kansas State, whatever it is that they have that makes them lose to Iowa State and Kansas State. Like, they haven't ridded themselves of that.
I don't know if it's a product of just being too high on yourself, you know, beating Nebraska on the road the way they did last week. I don't know what it is, but I really kept looking at Kansas State and thinking they just spent no time on a non-conference opponent the week before, and they focused on Oklahoma and tried to beat them with just being completely vanilla. But I'm like, yeah, when you do that, you're obviously focusing on Oklahoma. And they know the way to win recruits and the way to escalate, your brand in this conference is to beat the top dog, and they consistently are competing with Oklahoma, and Leipold is just incredible.
And not to mention, I mean, it's going to be week in and week out with Oklahoma and probably Texas in the same regard, and it's not any different than it was, but there is an added, like, they're the traitors now. Like, everybody's going to be gunning for Oklahoma and Texas to knock them off, and to really make it hurt.
I hope the officials aren't taking it out on Oklahoma. I really don't want to ever be that guy to cry for.
No.
And they're probably trying to get to the SEC, too. They probably pay better
than
the
SEC.
I did
think that the pass interference on Justin Broyles was pretty bad.
I thought it was bullshit.
That was egregious. But everything else is like shit that they did. They weren't making up. It's like you can't jump. You can't move before the ball snapped. That's a very elementary thing.
The most frustrating penalty of the night, it was third down, right? When they made the face mask at the end. And
oh, I think Aguebu had the face mask, yeah, on Vaughn.
It was third down, yeah?
Or Martinez, I guess it was.
I think it would have been third down. I think it would have been third and long. Yeah. It would have been like third and 10.
And the whole team was there to tackle him, too. I mean, he would have at most gained another 3 yards, and they probably would have gotten the ball back. Well, of course, then again, I don't know if they would have stopped him on a third and 10 quarterback run, but I felt pretty good about it at the time.
I think like the glaring thing that we hadn't talked about, like tonight, you've seen such good tackling, and especially you've seen guys swarm to the football on the outside. But tonight you would see a guy miss the tackle, you know, when the guy caught that, when they would run like the bubble on the outside, the initial guy would miss the tackle. I think Woody Washington did it one time. And then the second guy, there would only be one other guy coming at the guy, you know, that caught the ball. Like normally you would see like 3, 4, 5. So if someone missed a tackle, it wasn't that big of a deal because there'd be 3 other guys there to clean it up. Tonight, they just didn't play like that on defense. Like, they were not a swarming defense at all.
Well, there was nobody around. Like, there was nobody around the football.
Many times they caught a ball without anyone 5, 10 yards.
It felt like it truly felt like at times there was like 5 defenders out there. Like, they were playing 6 man down.
Hey, Eddie, you know, when you're shooting and you're looking, you kind of feel when like the crowd can feel it, like the court, you're like, yeah, the quarterback can hear that the crowd's going crazy. There's this guy getting close to you. I barely felt that at all tonight. No, like, I'm watching.
They never got close to him.
There wasn't. It happened like once or twice tonight, and it just. I'm like, this is really, really weird for this defense. It felt weird anyway tonight.
Yeah.
The only big swell I remember is when Martinez threw that ball up for grabs, and Bowman was coming from the middle of the field, and they could see him coming over to intercept it.
What a play that was by the wide receiver to knock him out.
I thought that was interference, actually, offensive interference.
I think that was Knowles, wasn't it? Malik Knowles?
Is that targeting?
Well, that's
the
thing
that Josh was saying it was targeting.
If that was a defender, it would have been absolutely targeting.
100%.
Yeah.
At least it should have been offensive interference. But it didn't matter. They ended up punting anyway.
Yeah.
But still.
It was a hell of a play, though.
Yeah, but that was the only play I could remember where the crowd was just like about to go insane, and then it didn't happen.
It felt like there were moments where it was like you could feel like they were getting close, but he always got out of it somehow, and it wasn't relatively close at all.
Maddening.
Yeah, it is maddening. It's just crazy to think that it feels like they're back to, and I know it's probably not the case. It's very reactionary right now, but it just feels like they're back to square one now.
Hey, I'm the big picture, though, coming into this season, did anybody with a brain that follows Oklahoma football actually think that they had a chance to win a national championship?
I don't think
we've never even talked about that. Yeah. Like, it's not something. Yeah, I mean, I think everybody coming into the season was so pissed off about the way that the national media perception was of Oklahoma. Like, okay, Lincoln left, so Oklahoma football left with him. And no one ever really gave Brent Venables any kind of love at all whatsoever. It was just like, okay, he's the biggest name, you know, defensive or assistant coming into a program. And like, no, everyone's just like, well, Oklahoma's taking a step back. And so I think everybody was so angry about that. They weren't even thinking about, could we win a national championship? Like,
what is success to you guys? My personal thought was, okay, make it to the conference championship game, and then it's a success. And this conference is actually pretty tough this year, and I still feel the same way about it. Like, I never, like, look, the talent-wise, they're not there with Georgia, right? They're not at that level yet. They're going to get there with the way it looks in recruiting. You guys could certainly speak to that, but I just don't think it's quite there yet. It's, you know, when
people,
you're...
Here's the problem. People don't think like that. They don't think like you.
Well, Venables doesn't either, but you know it's reality.
Yeah, people don't sit and say, okay, what's reality? Yeah. Like, how many losses could I live with? Like, no one thinks like that. It's
win by
like,
50 or
yeah, the people that you're dealing with online, the mass majority of them are like, you know, even if you win, they'll still want to get rid of Dylan Gabriel because he's not Baker Mayfield.
They want to go to the office on Monday morning and be like, we're Alabama. We're Georgia.
Yes.
And I get that to a certain extent, but I do think that whatever Oklahoma's fans' expectations were going into the season, it wasn't that. Like it wasn't. It was far from it. I think it was just you didn't want
to
walk out.
You lose to Texas, you know, like maybe that happens.
You could, and I could even live with losing to Kansas State and doing it in a manner where you go, they just beat you tonight. They made more plays than you. I didn't walk out of there feeling like that tonight. It was like they got their ass whooped.
They did. You know, about the last 10 years, every year, preseason, I always figure out a way to bet Oklahoma to win the national championship just because I think it's a possibility.
Yeah.
I didn't do it this year.
Wow.
I just didn't think it was a reality. I'm like, okay, you know, Venables has got to get his guys in there. And yes, they're bought in, but they just lost too much on offense, like, and up front that I'm just not going to sit there and stare at it and be like, oh yeah, national champions. No, they're not. They're not that yet. Right? Like, see, it's going to happen, though.
Your brother and I joke about this all the time. Like, because we're at OU at the same time. Like, we could see, like, in 1996, like, walking from class to class.
Oh, my God.
Like, you know, with your buddies or a guy that you just met, and you start up an Oklahoma football conversation. And the conversation always was some derivative of, there's not a game on our schedule that we cannot win this year. Even though you were going to be underdogs, like, we have Kale Gundy, or, you know, whatever, we have talent, we can do this, and like if everything turns right, there's not a game that we can't win. It wasn't like, you know, back then it wasn't like we shouldn't lose a game. It was the opposite, pretty much, which was, if magic fairy dust were sprinkled on every game this year, there's a way that we could somehow win them all, even though OU was terrible then. I mean, I
think that was the year that Nebraska played OU here, and Nebraska scored
Seth Luttrell was the starting running back.
Five non-offensive touchdowns.
Actually, that was pre-Seth Luttrell, I think.
Yeah, Seth Luttrell would have been like 99, right?
Blake started him.
Maybe a freshman year or a redshirt, but yeah, I think it was pre-Luttrell.
But yeah, that was, I think, yeah. I mean, those Nebraska teams were just nasty, and they did not take any pity on Oklahoma being down.
I still think they can win this conference, maybe, but I'm being realistic about it. I'm like, okay, I'm looking at the recruiting and I'm like blown away. And I, you know, Jackson Arnold, I got to see him firsthand. I'm like,
he's so good.
Oh my God. You both have
seen him firsthand.
He's going to play next year and he's going to start at some point next year. I'm convinced of that.
You think?
Well, no, I really think, you know, if you're talking about realistic goal is to play well enough to keep this recruiting class together.
Yes.
To get your defense playing at a level where you don't have, you know, departures or you know, what is it they call when you leave a ship, a pirate ship? Deserters. Like, you don't want any deserters.
That's what I was, 10-2, 9-3, just keep this recruiting class intact and everything is going to be fine. This is a gap year to me.
Yeah. You can't let anything snowball. And by snowball, I mean go down to Fort Worth and get beat next week or lose at the Cotton Bowl or, you know, just look like shit in general.
You know, Christopher, the good thing about you being here is, like, we are slaves to the message board. So, like, we're kind of doing a pod, like, that we know the message board would be doing a little bit because it's all defeatist. It's all, this thing's over. You know, Brent wasn't
fire
the
levy,
answer.
Fire roof.
Brent wasn't the answer.
The honeymoon's over.
Yeah. What's the worst one you've seen tonight?
I mean, I just dealt with Twitter, and then I rushed back here to do the radio show, and now we're doing the pod, so I haven't even been on the Crimson Corner.
It's bad, but it's very expected. I think that there's a lot of people that just feel just kind of like, it's like I was walking out of the stadium. I saw a couple of people I know, and it's like, just kind of laugh about it. It's like, well.
That shit again.
Yeah, like, it happened. There we are again. You can't, I'm not mad. I think people wanted us to.
No, that's like why I brought that. Like, your perspective is welcomed because it's like we do forget about, like, this really isn't about winning a national championship this year. It's about building it, holding it together. But again, what did I say when I came in here? And it's like, I don't want to hear any silver linings.
Yeah.
Like, none of that shit tonight. Like, about all the crap we just watched.
It just is old to sit here, and whether it be in week 4 or week 6 or week 8 or, you know, it was week 9 last year, where you're like, ah, they got problems. They got problems, and it's not getting fixed overnight.
And if Alex Grinch was coordinating this defense, as I kept thinking about it, I'm like, would they have given up that many points? I don't know. But I'm like, I can't think about that. I have to think about next year.
It was a very Alex Grinch-like performance on defense tonight.
He actually kind of handled running quarterbacks and screwed that up all night. But yes, running quarterbacks is that has been the problem with Brent Venables and his coming up party, I think, in 04 against Texas was when I was like, oh, maybe he can handle a running quarterback like Vince Young. But that
remember, he held Vince Young to 12-0 game. I mean, yeah, shut him out.
It was a little rainy that day, but it was kind of pre-Vince Young, like before he really, really thrust it into gear.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was 04, and then 05 is when they won the national title. So
that was the last game Vince Young lost in college.
That OU Texas game?
12-0, yeah.
Wow. Well,
I mean, the thing about it, too, is we're going to sit here and all week they're going to say, you know, we're going to rely on the leadership in the locker room. Everybody's going to make that case that everything's okay. Nobody's panicking. But this game's going to always be in the back of your mind. Like, when is it going to reemerge?
Yep.
And they just, again, it was just so almost inexplicable to see.
Yeah, you're
going to
be wondering when this defense falls apart again. Like,
yeah.
After they stop Nebraska, after that first series, you're like, well, maybe Brent has this defense figured out. Like, maybe they've got it out. Like, maybe that is past us to where we see a defense that just falls apart and lets another team run all over them or whatever. But now that's gone. Like, now it's like, okay, this defense can definitely get run over by anybody.
It's like all the goodwill that they built over the last 10 months basically went out the window in the matter of 4 hours tonight.
Just do not screw it up next week. I don't think they will. TCU had their hands full. I don't think it was a similar deal. I think TCU had to win against SMU. They had to. Sonny Dykes had to win that game. I don't think they were looking ahead to OU. I overanalyze these things. You know, teams looking ahead. I do it all the time. But I really do. There's a lot to it in college, especially trying to get these kids to buy in every week. I do think OU is going to be laser focused and not looking ahead to Texas next week. And if they screw that up, okay, yeah, I'm really worried about it.
Now, I mean, we need to wrap this up, but I wanted to kind of get this out there because people are going to be like, who the hell is this guy that they had on at the end of the pod? Your name's Christopher Fitzpatrick. You've been shooting, you shot for a long time for Fox Sports Southwest, right? Like many years.
Yeah, 2002 to 2016, and I became a freelancer. So basically 20 years, I'm still doing stuff with them like I did tonight, Bally's now.
Okay. We're not big Bally fans, but...
Trust me, I've heard it.
It's not your fault.
Yeah. It's not your fault, yeah. Well, I mean, Thunder come around, we'll be fans again.
We don't have to tell everybody specifics, but there was a conversation that we had that may have been back-channeling between Bally and the Oklahoma, the decision-makers at Oklahoma when it comes to TV decisions.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. But... No, you also, you've been touring the country with this documentary that you did with Mike Hosty, too.
Yes.
What's the official name? Is it just Oklahoma Breakdown?
Oklahoma Breakdown, yep. And it's a documentary about Mike Hosty, and it's fascinating. I run into people who went to school at Oklahoma who don't know who he is.
Are you thinking about suing Gabe Eichert anytime soon?
No. No, I was really blown away, but then I also found out that there's like a family connection between Gabe and Hosty.
Oh yeah,
and so
yeah.
I was like, oh okay, that's cool.
I don't think Gabe or Caroline would like. Hosty's wife was her nanny when she was mm-hmm. growing up.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
I knew when I went to, like, I don't really know Mike, but when I went to one of Gabe's engagement parties and he was there. I thought it was really strange because I didn't know Gabe as like a big Hosty guy.
Yeah.
And so then when I found that out later, it was so relieving because I was like, okay, that makes perfect. And I didn't introduce myself. I didn't talk to him. So I felt like an ass like the whole time. But I was just like, is he working the engagement?
Yeah, is he about to play?
Like, is he
about
getting ready to break out the, you know, the instruments and stuff? But no. And so... Yeah, the Oklahoma Breakdown thing has a lot to do with, you know, his family and Gabe's family and why their podcast was named after that. And I know that, like, he's the sweetest guy alive because he just, like, told Gabe, like, here, you know, it was, like, on a napkin, like, here, you can use my trademark and do whatever you want.
He did the same thing with me. I, you know, had to ask him. I mean, there's a lot of Hossie songs, like 30 to 35 songs. He's like, yeah, you can do whatever you want to with them. And then,
and you
know,
didn't have to pay to license them.
No, all. Which is, yeah. But hopefully,
if the doc sells to like Netflix or something, that like you get some, he gets a nice kickback out of that.
Well,
right?
Well, it's free promotion for him, basically, more than anything. That's you know, how I was hoping he would look at it, and I think he has. We haven't really gotten into details about that, but he was just like, yeah, whatever. He's the most agreeable human being in something like this, because otherwise I couldn't do it. I mean, it's like 30, like I said, 35 songs. That's a lot of rights involved in that, and obviously.
And how many years did you...
Five.
Five to put that documentary together.
Five to put it together, and a lot of trips to Norman, a lot of Sunday nights at the deli.
Wow. A lot of red cups being drank throughout the process of the filming of this.
Yeah, and you know, like I've always just kind of, it's always funny when he somehow mixes in football into his shtick. And you know, anybody listening to this podcast who's ever seen Hossie, you know, there's nobody like him. There's nobody in the world like Mike Hossie, and he lives in Norman, Oklahoma, and he's still playing every Sunday night at the deli. And I. Every time I come down, like, yeah, he's still got it.
Well, like I was explaining, like him to like Eddie and the guys, like most people have no idea how many people he's taught how to play an instrument, like in his lifetime. Like that's part of how he made his living, was just giving lessons and stuff. So
I'm curious to know real quick. I know you guys are really trying to wrap this up, but you guys have seen him over the years at the deli.
Yeah,
I think
he used to play the sports animal when we stayed in Dallas for OU Texas.
Uh-huh.
He and Super Freak were like the two most played, like the two biggest acts that came out to play at our hotel. Yeah, Love Freak. What did I say? Love Freak. Yeah.
Love Freak, yeah, cover band. I'm just happy that you guys, and I remember when I first heard that, I was like, okay, good. The Sooner Scoop guys are aboard. That's good, because I need that in my corner if I'm going to try to market this thing. And to OU fans who don't know who he is, like if you see an icon with Mike, this guy in a beard and glasses saluting with a guitar over his shoulder, that's the icon for
even
the documentary.
Even if you've never been to the deli, I almost can guarantee you, if you've been around Norman, you've seen him on his bike somewhere, like rolling around, especially around the campus corner area.
I'm shocked every time if I talk, like I met some guy, you know, in media who went to school to OU. He graduated a couple years ago, and he said he loves the deli, goes there all the time. He's like, I've never heard of him.
He must be a loser. He's not up there on Sundays.
Sunday.
That's how you separate the real people from the Friday night goers.
Yeah, you have to be kind of a degenerate to really go out all the time on Sundays. Yeah. But anyway, thanks for asking me about it. It's been a labor of love, you know.
And well, have you already had the New Hampshire, or is that coming up?
New Haven Docs.
Or New Haven.
Yeah, New Haven Docs is coming up. So it's going to screen it at another festival in Boston before that. And the New Haven Docs, I just talked to him about this. He is flying out to Connecticut, and he's playing his first show on the East Coast. So he's going to bring all this Norman, all this Oklahoma, all these Oklahoma witticisms.
Oh, wow.
And he's going to be telling jokes to, you know, people, Yale kids, or in that, everything in between.
Can we shame, like, Norman Film Festival or anything? Like, is there any way to, like start a camp? I mean, we're pretty good at starting campaigns here. We got the Make Lindsay Street Great Again. It was in the flyover today, by the way. I don't know if Eddie told you that or not.
It was pretty sweet. Guy came over and got the flag, and he took it up there, and it was definitely up there.
Well, he offered to buy the flag, but we told him no.
Or flying out of the back of the B-52. It's badass.
No ill will towards Norman Film Fest, and they're going to help. You know, we're going to, I don't know, basically make it quick. We had to cancel our screening at Norman Film Fest, but we're going to do another one that's going to have involved with it. And I just wanted everybody to get the right, you know, viewing in the right situation, and to really get to enjoy it. It was just they had a last minute cancellation on a venue, and it kind of fell through. But I want to have it in an indoor theater, so you know, like I mean, I was like thinking about you, like I hope you can come, and it's going to be, you know, perfect setup, and it just fell through. And I'm like, let's get this right.
Cool. All right.
I will say.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Selman thing was really cool today. It's unfortunate that it's going to be overshadowed. I mean, obviously,
I know,
the statue's going to be there forever, but Louis and Lucius
Leroy
and
Dewey
were awesome. I thought that
Leroy Jr.
Was great. We put up all the video. It's up on the board. It's up on YouTube, whatever, if you want to check it out. But that was a really cool thing. And the statue is badass.
Yeah, I walked past it. Such it lighted a good up. Job with it's that. Really cool, too.
They did such a good job. It's so much better than the Heisman Trophy stuff. I think the guy's name was Chris Richards, so he did a really good job doing that.
It looked awesome, and it was great to see the king out there.
There's literally one person that get away with some of the stuff that he said up there on the podium. Talking about the tits on the art statue in front of the arts college. He's like, I don't even know what the hell that is. It's some gargoyle with big tits. And everybody just started laughing. I mean, it was just like, oh my God.
He gets a fertility goddess, is what that is.
He's the best, man. He is the best.
All right.
Today wasn't the best.
Today was not great. Hopefully, a little lightheartedness with Christopher Fitzpatrick there. Made it not so horrible, hopefully.
Well, the U-40 is going to be another. It's going to be another. We're going to have to go relive this.
Yeah.
We might need to move it up to Tuesday just so we can get it out of the system.
Oh, my God. Got to give Josh time. Josh may not even want to do Monday Morning Idiot this week. I don't know.
Missed tackle.
We'll know how bad it is if Bob dropped an F-bomb at the U-40 this week.
He might.
That might happen.
He might
Isaiah Thomas the thing.
He was just like, I mean, we talked after the game. It's just like, it's inexplicable the way that they play tonight. You couldn't, I don't think that they can play worse. I don't think that it can be any worse. I guess
they could just have some turnovers on offense.
Yeah, I guess you would turn the ball over a couple times, maybe get a punt blocked.
Yeah.
But even today, it was, you know, the Blake Knowles return that changed the momentum of the game. They just never were able to get it.
Yep. All right, well, that'll do it for the Eskridge Lexus game podcast. Well, you got to drop that right at the end. It's like 3 a.m. Thanks.
You were talking over it.
We'll be back.
Ed would agree.
Next week from Fort Worth. If you hadn't heard, OUTCU scheduled at 11:00 on ABC. The great guys at Eskridge Lexus will be taking care of us as we head down to Fort Worth. And no word if will we see Christopher down there, or are you gonna be busy?
I'm trying to get tickets to that game, so Yeah, let me see. Yeah.
You need to go. Like, I would love to see like shots on Sights and Sounds of you and Corby, just like, you know, shirtless, just going nuts in the stands.
That would be the Texas game.
Okay, all right. Well, that's gonna do it for us. We'll see you guys back here next week for another edition of the Eskridge Lexus Post Game Podcast, right here on Soonerscoop.com.